You're listening to the Recovered Life Show, the show that helps people in recovery live their best recovered lives. And here is your host, Damon Frank.
And welcome back to the Recovered Life Show. We're talking about rebuilding trust in relationships. I'm pleased to introduce my guest, Carol Colon, to the show. Carol is a therapist at My Therapist. How you doing, Carol?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me today.
I'm so great to have you on the show. It's your first time on the show, and interesting topic we have, trust. Mm-hmm. You know, so many times when people come into recovery, or even if they've been sober for a long time, Carol, you know, the issue is always trust. There's always a trust issue, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe they have a trust that they broke in. They said, I'm not going to drink anymore. And they kept drinking, right? With a family, a loved one, a romantic partner. So I'm so glad to have you on the show to really dive into this about what is the process of rebuilding the trust? Do you want to just jump in real quick and, you know, tell us a little bit about yourself and this whole idea of trust and you know, why that's important and that, you know, how we go about starting to kind of rebuild that in the recovery process.
Yeah, absolutely. So let me just tell you a little bit about me first. I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist. I've been practicing for over 20 years, and my specialty and my passion and my love is working with couples, all kinds of couples, but especially working with couples that have just gone through some sort of crisis, betrayal, the ones that are, you know, really, really struggling on the brink. Those are the couples that I most love to work with. Those are where I really excel. And I feel like I could do my best work. And I consider that like saving a family. We're saving not just a life, but we're saving an entire family, maybe an entire generation of that family by repairing and healing that relationship. And I don't see, there's not many relationships that I can see that are not repairable with the right amount of work. So I put everything I have into working with these couples and teach them how to rebuild trust, recover from betrayal, get on the right path to healing, and you know, creating the kind of relationship that lasts a lifetime. So I'm really excited about that. And I'm excited to be here to talk with you today about trust, because without that foundation, right? It is a foundation. It is the glue that keeps relationships together. It is the foundation that relationships are built on. So without that, really relationships will start to wither away, and they're open to all kinds of things, betrayals, exits, I call them, different ways to exit the relationship, to be emotionally disengaged. It just can deteriorate the relationship over time in many different ways if we don't make sure that at the beginning we are working at trust, and always every day, baby steps towards trust, not just big trust, but little trust also.
So, you know, I know there's people, I'm so glad to have you on the show, because your expertise in this and being able to really dive into this, you know, there's a whole thing called the amends process in recovery. And anyone who I've ever worked with in recovery or myself, you go through this amends thing. And a lot of it is about the first step of rebuilding relationships and making sure your side of the street is clean. And, you know, people who are listening to this are in recovery for the most part. So they're listening to this and they're saying, yep, I'm familiar with that. But they're saying, Carol, you don't understand. You said that everything is repairable. Not my situation. There's no way. Like, and you know, and I've seen this, that people have come in to recovery and they feel that they have just blown it with people. And there is no way they're ever going to be able to rebuild trust with anyone. Forget about those people, with anyone in their life. But that's not the case, right?
It's not the case.
It's something that you can do.
It is. And it's funny, as you're talking, I'm giggling a little, because I wrote like a free PDF downloadable, you know, kind of guide on my website. You can download it. And it's called How to Stop Being Stupid. Right. And to me, like, that's one of the things, like, let's not be stupid here. We can fix this. Couples can repair relationships with each other, but also within their families, with their children, with their parents, with their friends. There's simple steps to work towards rebuilding trust. Now, I am not saying that every relationship is repairable. Certainly there are toxic relationships that can be damaging to both partners. And you have to look at that, and you have to evaluate each relationship individually. But most relationships where there is genuine effort and there is a desire to change on both parties, it can happen and we can work towards that. It's not an easy process. It's a long process. It takes time, dedication, a lot of work, a lot of self-work, but it can be done if you have the dedication to do it. And you have a guide. I think having a guide is super important, whether that's a peer mentor, a therapist, a close friend, supportive family. You need someone there to encourage you, to build you up, to trust you, and to support you. I think that's super important in order to make it happen. You can't do it in a bubble. I believe that.
I one of the reasons I wanted to do this episode, I was excited to have you on, is because, I think if you have a lot of relationships in your life that are incomplete, and that might just be a broken trust, right? I think over time, even if you're able to stay sober for a year or 2 or 5 years or 10 years, over time, that not being complete in some way, if you know what I mean by that, like complete, like really an understanding, that leads to relapse, because it really, I think incomplete relationships with people, and I'm not just talking about romantic relationships, I'm talking friendships, parents, all that kind of stuff, siblings, see a lot with siblings, in recovery, having this incompleteness is a killer in recovery. And it's over the years I've realized how important relationships are. I didn't, I'm a bit of a lone wolf,
Yeah,
Carol,
I get
like,
that. I totally get that.
one of the hardest things that I had to do, probably about 20 years into my recovery, is to say, I think I need people. I think I need a recovery
Oh my
community. I think I
gosh.
need to have
Right.
people. Like, and
But
I look at
darn
it
it.
like a yes.
I
And
was
I
doing
look, it's
so good on my
crazy.
own.
I look at it like a character defect. And I was like, why am I looking at this like a character? Like, this is ridiculous. Can we dive into this relationship thing? Because I think people don't understand the value of it. They say, yeah, well, I broke these relationships off or whatever, but they don't understand the importance of relationships in their life and their and what it's and the value it is for them to stay sober long term, to help them stay sober.
Yeah, when I think about that, what you're explaining here, like there are the lone wolves in the world, right? And I'm kind of a lone wolf myself, but being a therapist, I'm kind of forced into relationships and I value and I can appreciate relationships. But for me, it's a lot of hard work. Maintaining relationships is hard work for folks that are kind of lone wolves, right? Like, yeah, I'm good kind of over here watching. I don't necessarily have to be in that relationship. And what I've come to learn is that that's all about vulnerability, safety, being brave, being open to being hurt, possibly, right? And so it's really, really safe to be the lone wolf over here and not engage in relationships because no one can hurt me if I'm over here all by myself. I take care of myself. I don't have to rely on anyone. My feelings are protected, and I'm not really vulnerable to anybody else, their feelings, my own feelings, that kind of all of it goes away. I can contain and regulate myself, right? Does that connect with you?
100%.
Right?
Vulnerability. Okay, so this is now we're getting
Yeah,
into the
now we're going
therapy
into it.
part of it, right? So, like, let's get real here. The vulnerability with relationships is the scary part, right? Because, well, what is going to happen
If
if
I open
I
up.
be yeah, if I open up, what's going to happen?
I know, right? It's really scary to think. Like, even on a very, very small level, just sharing a small thing, like, I need you, right? Like, I really just need you right now. Can you just really just be here for me, whatever that means for you, right? That's a really vulnerable thing to say. And almost my stomach kind of butterflies a little bit, even as I say it. I'm like, oh gosh, that is such a vulnerable thing to say because what if they say no? What if they reject you? What if they say you're not worthy? Right? You're not worthy of my time, of my, attention, of my love. You're not worthy of it. You're not good enough. You're not trustworthy, right? You've made mistakes. You're defective. You're broken. There's something wrong with you. Gosh, all that, like, it just comes up, right? And it's scary to put yourself out there and really be vulnerable and ask for what you need or open and honest with your feelings. Especially if you've done wrong, right? Especially if you know I've done wrong, I've hurt people, I've betrayed people, especially if you've done those things, then it comes up even more for you. The fear of rejection.
Yes. And it's interesting, like I'm just starting to kind of see now, and I'm in my 50s, just to, to clarify for anybody out there who's new listening to the show. But I'm realizing, like, I've always known that relationships, and I've always had relationships with people that I understand it's like the important thing. But now I'm starting to kind of see, well, it's important in a different way than I thought of it. It is much more of an internal game. And I'm a lone wolf, like what you describe is like, I sometimes like being part of it, but I don't necessarily, I either want to be the leader of it, or I just want to be way, way on. I want to be able to leave.
That's
Right?
control. That's
Yeah.
control, right? I'm in control of my feelings. If I'm leading this conversation, if I'm leading this discussion, then I know where it's going to go and I'm not going to let it steer in a direction that will make me vulnerable, right? And if I just stay out of it completely, then I'm safe too. It's all about safety, emotional safety, and control because there's so much at risk. There's the sense of self that's at risk, right? There's so much. I think we all walk around, all of us, with negative thoughts about ourselves. We're not good enough. We're too much. We need too much. We don't need enough. We don't know how to communicate. We don't know how to express ourselves. We're def I mean, there's so many negative messages that we have in our head all the time. And we're always looking for validation in our world from other people that that message is correct. And those are the messages we're looking for. And they're very, very subtle. And I see your eyes get big right there. You're like, oh my gosh, she's right. I can see it, right? Like
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
we're looking in our world, in our relationships, for validation that we're not good enough. And that's sad. It's so sad to go through life and always just want to validate that negativity, that little voice that's in your head telling you you're not good enough. You know, when I work with couples, what I first do is get them to share those negative thoughts. And that's vulnerable in itself, to be able to share with someone, your partner maybe, the person that you think already thinks these things. To open up to them and say, I just feel like I'm not good enough for you. I feel like I'm never going to meet your needs. I feel like no matter how hard I try, I can't get it right. And why would you forgive me for the hurt that I've caused you? I wouldn't forgive me, right? To be able to say that is vulnerable. And the fear is that they're going to say, you're right. That's the fear, that they're going to say, you're right. You're not good enough. You're right. This isn't going to work. You're right. You've hurt me too much. And so we just don't say it. And then we just look for that validation. By someone's behavior, maybe a look that they gave us, something they said, perceived rejection. And then we just calculate that in our mind. See, I was right. Why should I make myself vulnerable? Look right there as proof. And then
You
we just
know,
continue on.
it's interesting. I'm thinking back to this experience that I had, and I thought about this last week. This pops in my mind all the time when I think about trust. We're talking about trust. I had a service commitment several years ago, about like 8 years ago. I decided that I was going to go to a couple 12-step meetings that were horrible, that were absolutely really bad. And I'd had some time. So I said, I'm going to go. I'm just going to sit there and be of service because these people don't have a lot of people who are coming into this particular meeting. And it was like in a halfway house in a not so great location. And I would go every Sunday when it was really hot in Los Angeles, and I would sit there. And so I got over a couple months, I got to know these guys. And this one guy was like crying. It was a men's group meeting. This guy was crying. He was holding up these keys and he was like saying, I am house sitting for somebody. I'm going to be a house sitter. And, Carol, I have to say, like, I'm a little jaded sometimes. I'm saying to myself, it's like, okay, like, not that big of a deal, right?
That was a big
And
deal
then
for
he
him.
goes on to share that, he'd lived under a bridge for 15, 20 years. He'd ripped everybody off in the world and he'd been sober for 2 years. He would now had a job that they trusted him. And the employer gave him the keys and said, we want you to watch everything that we have, our business, our house, and everything. And this guy was so moved by it. It was such a big deal. And I think back to that a lot because I think a lot of times we don't appreciate the trust that people have in us. I know I have not always appreciated that. I think it's a human condition. We don't appreciate it, but about how really important it is. And that once that trust is gone, it's a very, it is difficult sometimes to be able to get that back.
Yeah. You don't realize how important it is until you lose it.
Yeah.
And when you lose that trust, all of a sudden, just everything around you just crumbles and falls apart. And it's hard to function. When you have someone that trusts you and supports you, and you have this mutual respect for one another in a relationship, this deep, deep connection where you can truly be yourself, all of it, right? The ugly parts and the amazing parts. And this person still says, I choose you. You're the one I want. I want to be with you. And I know everything there is to know about you, all the goods and all the ugly and all the things. And know that this could go wrong one day. Know we're going to make mistakes. And I still choose you again and again. Wow. Like, that's so powerful, because then you go out into the world with this confidence and this resilience and this belief that you can be trusted, that you are a good person, that you are worthy. Like, it just fills you up when you can do that in a relationship. And you go out into the world.
What are some of the things, Carol, that break trust in relationships? I mean, there's some obvious ones in romantic relationships, right? What are some of the things that break trust in relationships?
I think it could be lots of different things. It could be, you know, we break trust with our partner in many different ways, very, very small ways over time. And then there are like the big ways, right? It's like the big ways might be relapsing, disclosing that there's been drugs or alcohol that the partner didn't know about. Infidelity is a big betrayal, a big hurt. There's also, you know, financial betrayal, where maybe one partner has spent money that the other partner is not aware of and gotten them into some trouble. So like, there's these big crisis type of betrayals. And then there are smaller, you know, mistrusts, lies, white lies. You know, we all tell an untruth every once in a while. We all keep information from our partner on occasion. We try not to do that, but we're human beings. We make mistakes. And so I think of trust as a ladder, and we start at the very bottom with no trust. And then the first step is to, you know, basic things, small things, being consistent and, you know, being honest, sharing our feelings, not withholding what we think, but being open and honest and transparent with our partner. And can we build on that trust? And there are steps to that. But in the beginning of relationships, if we're not honest about little things, simple things like, what kind of movies do we like to watch? What kind of food do we like to eat? What kind of values do we have? If we're just telling our partner what we think they want to hear in an effort to avoid conflict or for them to accept us or like us, we're still not being honest with them or ourselves. And later on, that's going to build over time, and they're not going to trust us with the big things.
You know, what's interesting? Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I think you said that in a very, very clear way, and it's very easy to understand. And one of the things I think is complicated with romantic relationships, especially in recovery with trust, is many people will come into recovery, the recovery process, because something has broken. Mm-hmm. They've reached a place where they've reached bottom. Primarily, if there is like a husband, a wife, boyfriend, or girlfriend that has involved a significant other, they've helped them they've basically given an ultimatum, right? We've had a lot of interventionists on. We have interventionists on almost every month, you know, to talk about that process. And the complicated thing I find is that many people, Carol, like, I've never met an alcoholic that doesn't have a really great codependent with them. So the codependent is as addicted to changing the alcoholic as the alcoholic is to drinking, right? Mm-hmm. So it's a very weird dynamic. And a lot of the times the trust also on the other side with the person that's in recovery has been broken as well, because the person's not being honest about why they're addicted to helping. They don't have good boundaries, right? So there's not these good. Can we talk about this whole boundary situation? Because I think this is what leads to most of the unhappiness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you're right. It's not just trust is not broken in one direction. I find when couples come to me and there's been a betrayal of trust for whatever reason, When I dig a little deeper, the betrayer typically also has problems trusting their partner, which contributed to this problem in the first place. So we
Yes.
dig really deep. So when couples come in, we hear their stories, we understand their pain that they're currently going through, but we dig really, really deep. We go back to childhood wounds, patterns, interactions with primary caregivers to understand where these patterns originated and then developed over time. And usually they include poor boundaries, right? They learn how to have poor boundaries in their early relationships with their primary caregivers, maybe with siblings, maybe with some, early friendships, and they learn how to have poor boundaries through these dysfunctional relationships with these primary people in their lives. And they just continue to have those poor boundaries over and over and over again in their relationships.
You know, it's interesting because if you've been sober for any period of time, you'll be at a party and, a friend will come up and say, "Hey, I need to talk with you about Bob. Bob's drinking a lot and, do you think he's an alcoholic? Do you think, what,
Oh boy.
And you always have the you. It's just like just listen to get if people are listening to this and they're saying, "Well, that's never happened to me." Wait, it'll happen. You stay sober for any period of time, you become the go-to person with your non-sober friends, right? Of the gauge, and
I can relate being a marriage therapist. Try
yes,
going to a
right,
party, right?
right, yeah, of course. And they're like they'll always ask you a question. And one of the questions after they ask, "Hey, do you think this person's an alcoholic?" Which I really can't answer, right? Like, yeah, I can't.
Right.
How do I answer that? But I can say, well, these are the things that you look out for. They'll always say next, "Hey, how come this is the fifth alcoholic that I've dated?" Right? Like, you know what I mean? And
Oh my gosh, yes.
I'm like, maybe it's you.
Right, common
May,
denominator, buddy. Let's
may,
look at the
maybe the
common
problem
denominator.
isn't, yeah, maybe it's
Yes.
you. And I
Yes.
think, and the reason why I'm saying this is that I've seen in working, especially with men in the recovery process, I've seen a lot of people come on and they will take on, maybe they have done something bad. Right? A betrayal, financially, whatever, maybe they rip somebody off. Like there's all different levels, right? Of this trust.
Yes.
But then they put everything on them. Well, then this was my responsibility too, and this was my fault. And I'm like, no. Like, not all that. Yes, you did what you did. That was not good. You need to make amends for that and make that right.
But you're
But
not
the
responsible
rest,
for everything.
you're not responsible for everything in the world. You're putting way too much on yourself.
Do you think, and I'm going to ask you a question now. Do you think that that is why sometimes people don't succeed at sobriety is because they take on too much responsibility? They're responsible for their family, they're responsible for their friends. They want to make change everything. They're kind of on this, drive to like correct all of these dysfunctions because now it's like their eyes are open and they see it, right? They didn't see it before. Now they see it because they're doing the work and it's everywhere, right? Dysfunction is everywhere. And being a therapist, you see it everywhere. But you try not, you can't take it all on.
I would actually say yes, but with a little caveat. I think it's the people who stay sober that suffer with it in silence. It's not that necessarily you're going out, because one of the things that I realized was
That's
is that
interesting.
I was codependent, that I was taking on, that I had, this wasn't until very later on in my recovery where I had successful businesses. And I found myself doing way too much in business partnerships. And then realizing that in some of the friendships that I had expectations. I would then overperform. And then I would be resentful about it, right? And not till
Yes.
later on, I figured out it's like, wait, hold on for one second. Like, this is a me problem. This isn't a you
Where did you
problem.
learn that? Where did you learn
Well,
how to do that? Who taught you that?
suffering, right? Like, you suffering, but I
Right.
think therapy was a big one for me. There's a
Yeah.
big, Carol, there's a big push now for mental health and recovery. In the 90s, there wasn't, no one had these conversations when I came in I came in
There
in
was a lot of
93.
shame.
No one, yes. And what made it worse is people would make these amends to people. And they would hear, "You're a narcissist."
Yes. I could
not
see
realizing that. The other person not really kind of understanding. Correct. They did dump it on you again. Yes, correct. And I think part of what's changed, roll with me for a little bit, with the relationship thing that I've seen in recovery is, if somebody asks me, if somebody that I'm working with asks me, even with accountability, saying, look, I have these amends to make. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I will say, you know what? I don't think you should make that amends in a traditional way. Because I think, quite honestly, you're going to re-victimize the person. And the amends you need to make to this mm-hmm. person is not to act like that again.
Yeah, I love
you
that.
Need not to be like that again. Okay. Like, so if you really are serious, I don't care about your repairing. The repairing for you, yeah, and I've told people
the repairing, like, doesn't trump the hurt, right? That you could cause.
Correct. And we hear these TikTok stories all the time. Like, you know, people come in, it's like, I'm 10 years sober now. And I went into my employer and told them that I had cheated them and they gave me $100,000, patted me on the back. That I'm trying. It doesn't always work like that. Right.
Wow.
Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's not always a TikTok story. People sometimes people are not, they are not able to receive mm-hmm. any kind of repair.
Forgiveness
okay?
and repair is a two-person process.
Right. Can you talk about that a little bit? Because absolutely. I think so many people put this on themselves. They go above and beyond, which they should. I believe it's like, hey, if you wrong somebody, you need to make that right as much as you can make it right. But mm-hmm. there is a limit, right? Like mm-hmm. it is a two-person yeah. process.
Yeah, I think, you know, it is a two-person process because you can't get forgiveness by yourself. I mean, you can self-forgive, but you can't forgive in a relationship, whatever relationship, on your own. It's a two-person process. And the other person has to be willing to walk through that process with you to start with. And then once they agree to that, there has to be, you know, accountability, atonement, obviously, all those things, a genuine apology, an understanding for the damage that you've caused, and then a promise to never do it again. Right? A promise to never make that same mistake again, if possible. We're human, it happens, but to not intentionally do that. Now, what you're talking about here is like, if my making amends trumps somehow, right, your feelings, then that's not going to work, right? Because the priority in healing is to care for the other person. You're caring for them, you're caring for their heart, you're caring for their feelings, and you're helping them heal. And if what you're doing, which seems really important to you, and I'm sure it is, to make those amends, the way that you're doing it is reopening that wound and kind of re-examining it, and that's hurtful to the other person, then you're not really making amends. What you're doing is a selfish act of trying to heal yourself.
Yes. And I think, you know, selfishly, it is about healing yourself to a certain degree mm-hmm. in recovery, because, and I get what you're saying. But I think what a lot of people too that are not, don't have a drug and alcohol problem, that haven't recovered from that and are living in recovery, mm-hmm. don't understand that our inability as people in recovery to let go mm-hmm. of okay. things.
Yeah.
And to be able to, yeah, look, if you've wronged somebody, it's not good enough just to let go. In my opinion, it's not good enough. You have to make, like, you know, they say this a lot, you can get a horse thief sober, but they're still a horse thief, right? Mm-hmm. So it's not good enough
to just
have to not do that again. Like, you have to, that has to become a practice of your character, of who you are, right?
Right, right. I don't think letting it go is the answer. There's got to be a way. But if
correct.
The way you want to is creating more harm, then your intention is, and you're doing it anyway, knowing that, that's for you. That's not for them.
But right? I see this a lot. I've had people in 12-step groups that kill themselves because they were never able to repair relationships.
Yeah.
Even to write a letter to the person who's passed to be able to say, hey, I'm sorry I wronged you, right? Like, I'm sorry that I did that, right? Whether it was betrayal or whatever mm-hmm. it was, right? They yeah. were unable to say it, and they were unable to let go. So they were always living in the past. And we always say, look, if you're living in the present, and if you're living in the past, if you're living in the future in the past, you're not living in the present. And all of recovery is in the present. All relapses are you're either future tensing or past tensing. You're not here and now. Here and now is where it all happens, right?
Mm-hmm. That's right.
So it's this whole idea of just being able to let that go, right?
Mm-hmm.
Incorporate this new thing into your character. Of course, not have it happen again. We are human. Things do happen.
Right.
But not have it happen again, right? And move forward in your life being the kind of person that doesn't do things like that.
Exactly. So if you can't make amends with the other person for maybe they're not willing, they're not wanting that, it's too painful for them, and you're considering them and saying, this would be too painful for them to do it in this way. I need to take this that I'm carrying and I need to find another way to heal myself and to create forgiveness for myself and move forward with that, whatever that looks like. And whether it's writing a letter to that person that you never send, you just tuck it away, or incorporating a new behavior or routine or ritual that you incorporate that is healing for you, that relates to the hurt that you've made, right? Like maybe you've hurt people by taking their money, or maybe you've hurt people with your drinking, right? So maybe finding a new way to support others or create a foundation or mentor someone, you take that energy and you use it to heal in a different way, rather than saying, well, I want to do it this way and I don't care if it hurts that other person, right? And I don't think a lot of people do that, but I think being considerate of that it's a two-person process. Both have to be willing and it has to be mutually beneficial, because if one person is going to get a raw deal on that, then that's not really healing. Does that make sense?
Yes. Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, I'd love for you to talk about, you know, in conclusion here, I know that there's people, Carol, that are listening to this, and they say, "Babe, you like we started this. It's like you don't understand. Like, I've never really had great relationships. Don't have great family relationships, romantic relationships, friendships. I'm just not that kind of person, right? And I just really is it even really possible for me to do this, right? Because I think that's where a lot of people are at. They just look at it like, and maybe it's a self-worth issue. They just don't think it's possible for them, right? I'd love you to talk on that in conclusion, kind of about if somebody's listening to this and they're just like, man, I just don't even know if I should try because it just doesn't work out for me ever.
Yeah. So I think for folks that are really struggling with wondering if this could even be a reality for them, right? Maybe they've burnt too many relationships to the ground and they're really wondering, is this even possible? I think baby steps is the way to go. And the first step is to work on your own healing, right? To do some therapy, do some mentoring, do some, you know, self-exploration to understand yourself better and to have a good understanding of how you got here today. Because once you have a better understanding of yourself and some effective communication tools that we can all learn to use, and we all have to learn to use, because most of us did not come from homes where we were taught really effective communication, then we can start to reach out with, I would say, the person that would be the easiest person to reconnect with, and start with baby steps. And there's a couple things, you know, the steps that are required in order to rebuild trust is being honest with yourself and being honest in your communication with others, always telling the truth, don't lie, don't avoid conflict, be honest. That's the first thing, right? Always using I statements, talk about yourself and how you feel, try to help people to understand what's going on for you. And that's a first step. So you're showing them that you've really grown in these areas and you're trying to work on your communication and your understanding of yourself. And that would be a first step.
You know, it's one of the things that I've seen in recovery is it's been a blessing actually, and not a curse. At first I got sober in my late 20s, mid to late 20s. And I was like, this is the worst thing that's ever happened to me. Now I look at it as one of the best things. Not alcoholism, but the being able to recover and stay sober has been one of the best. I would never have been the person that I am now if it wasn't for this. And the interesting thing that you said about the whole possibility of it all, you know, a couple of years ago, I wrote down a list of some people that for a family situation to go to a case of an emergency situation that I had to write down that were just local to me. They were non-family members. And I noticed something that two of the people on the list, Carol, one was a multiple ex-con And the other one had a past that would be at the most considered very dodgy. They now are all in long-term recovery. Mm-hmm. And I noticed at second glance, because somebody asked me, well, who are these people? And when I thought about it, I said, these people are their word. Out of everyone I know, because they had had a transformation in their life mm-hmm. and they had lived in that transformation, you know, in this case, you know, one of the people, 20 years, 25 years, right? I've seen what this person's done. And it's interesting. I realized, I said, you know what, man, I would not have opened the door to this person 20 years ago. I would have been honestly afraid of that person 20 years ago, that they were going to rob me. I would trust everything I have with that person now. And it made me realize that, like, people can change, that change is absolutely possible, that it's not all or nothing.
That's right. Have a growth mindset.
It's not all or nothing.
A growth mindset is what you're talking about, as opposed to a fixed mindset, right? Fixed mindset is people don't change. Growth mindset is there's possibilities. People can change, people can grow, people can learn. And having a growth mindset with people that you're in a relationship with is super important. And giving people the opportunity to show you and prove to you that they can be trusted and that the relationship can be safe is so important. And that's a first step. Like you said, honesty and self-reflection, a deep understanding of yourself, and being able to communicate that, what you've learned about yourself, to others so that they can see, wow, there's some transformation here. This is intriguing. I want to learn more, and maybe I'll take the first step with you. So important.
Harold Colon, thank you so much for coming on the show today. This has been enlightening. We're going to have you back and talk more about relationships down the road here.
It.
Thank you so much for coming on today. This has been
thank
such a great episode.
Me. This has been thank a lot you. Of fun.
Sometimes addiction recovery can be a lonely battle, but you don't have to fight it alone. At Recovered Life, we're dedicated to helping you live your best recovered life. And that's why we're inviting you to subscribe to our free weekly newsletter. Every week, we carefully curate exclusive content from leading minds in addiction recovery, mental health, and all things important to the recovery lifestyle. Stay in the know with the latest news about addiction and get exclusive invitations to special recovery-focused events and explore insights tailored to support recovery from alcoholism, drug addiction, codependency, disordered eating, dysfunctional family dynamics, gambling, and so much more. With our newsletter, each week becomes an opportunity for growth, healing, and taking a step closer to the life you deserve. Take your first step towards a brighter future today. Go to recoveredlife.us and subscribe for free. Sign up now at recoveredlife.us.